Malolele, my name is Peter Faivakimoana Latini. Happy to be here to represent Tongans, MMT, Tongan Hard and Tongan Proud. But tune in to the Hurt Locker.
Reed, beautiful for Reed. Holds it up.
Before we start, we'd like to thank our communication sponsor, Freedom Internet. Locally owned and operated, Freedom Internet delivers secure residential short stay and commercial fiber internet services. Now ask yourself, when was the last time that you updated the security on your in-home router? Don't worry, because Freedom Internet will do it for you, keeping you and your family's online experiences safe and fast. Freedom Internet, connecting people and building community. Go to freedominternet.co.nz to enjoy the new and fast internet services that Freedom Internet provides. Thank you to Freedom Internet, our main sponsor of the podcast. Today we're joined by true icon of New Zealand rugby and Tonga rugby, a man whose footwork dazzled defences and whose passion for the game continues to inspire not only myself as a friend and family of Peter, but also a friend of all his kids and some of our family that we've grown up to love over the years. Peter wore the black jersey with pride, earning many caps for the All Blacks, and he also included appearances for Southland, the Highlanders and the Hurricanes during stellar provincial and Super Rugby career. Beyond the field, he's been a strong advocate for community and culture, using his platform to give back, just like he's doing with us here today. We're stoked to have him with us. It's family, it's not friends, it's Peter Alatini. Welcome to the podcast,
Doctor. Oh, thank you so much, Laurent. Man, pleasure to be here, man.
Man, I was laughing there when I first started. I texted Tiara, I said, sometimes, like, because sometimes it's kind of awkward, you know, when players, like, they finished and then they got work now and you don't know whether they're too keen to do, talk about their stories, especially when you've had to do it over and over. Sure. I mean, there's probably so many things that you've done where it's, like, the same question over and over. So, Peter, how was it like playing for the All Blacks?
Look, it is, you know, when it comes to family, and I remember when Tiara asked me, guys, hey, I think Laurent's doing a podcast and would love you to be a guest. Look, it's always a pleasure and a privilege, and even more so when it's family and friends that do ask. And I suppose the funny thing is, your story gets recycled and renewed, but obviously if these new listeners or younger generations who want to know a little bit more and probably didn't believe that I was a All Black at one stage, especially all the little schoolies nowadays, but hey, but that's fine. And look, it's just awesome to be on a platform to share and hopefully that a story resonates with someone and they can carry through.
No, I'm sure. Well, no, it was super good to have you on. I think especially because in our circles, at least, we've got so many friends, like especially mutual friends. And I was just down in Dunedin and everyone was like, oh, so who do you have next on? Who do you have next on? I was like, I've got Peter. And they're all like, oh. So it's going to be exciting once we get this out. I'm super keen and just super grateful to have you on us.
Pleasure, brother. Pleasure. And Dunedin, mate. Always good. good and kind of, you know, hazy memories of down there. But I love that place, mate. And I totally understand. Especially all our Kings boys that are down there, but more so all my footy players are all down there still and enjoying life. Great little town. Yeah. Just freezing, bro. Just freezing.
Oh, it was cold. Man, I was in bad form, eh? Like, I think on Saturday night, because it was graduation weekend, so all of my year group was down there as well, and everyone kind of turned the jets on. But, yeah, man, Jarl was putting me in bed at 1 a.m. And then somehow, I don't know how, I woke back up at 3 and then went back up.
It's what we do. Sometimes it's in the blood, brother. It's in the blood that, you know, you get a little bit of FOMO, you fall asleep, recharge, and then get back up there.
I just need a bit of a reboot.
That's right.
Now, sweet, we'll take it. Like, what are we up to now, Peter? What's where's life taking you now for what you're doing?
Yeah, well, funny enough, I've done 360 and back at our old stomping ground, Leron. Yeah. So I'm back at King's College as head of rugby. I assist in the first 15, but ultimately it's trying to, I suppose, show an opportunity to really kind of create a program that our kids enjoy the game. Mm. You know, I think it's a key aspect of our game. You know, these people talk that our numbers are rising and sometimes that's fine, but I see the enjoyment is not the same, I suppose. And we talk about different eras around the game, But I am a firm believer that if kids understand the game, that they mix it up with a bit of fun and enjoyment, that and then teach them to compete, because no one likes to lose.
No.
But there is an element of understanding that, and then how do you nurture that? And I suppose that's what lured me back into the school, an opportunity to put that in place, and a place that I suppose I hold dear to my heart, knowing that I went through, you went through, my kids went through, my nephew went through, and my brother. So there's a long history there, and a lot of families and friends that, you know, you don't owe them anything, but there's something there that you just still love to give back at some point as well.
Mm. It must be so, like you said, it must be so funny being back there. and then, you know, you've got the experience on you're about now. It must be, I mean, you've done a Pakuranga as well, you know, helping develop that rugby club as I went through it. But now going back to, you know, to a jersey you put on a lot as a young, and then watching your family go through, man, it must be exciting and really fun, eh?
Yeah, totally. Look, I've, like all the kids that have come through, and I was fortunate enough to have Tiara and Trey come through it, and obviously meet you guys and your brother, Jairus, and the whole King's College community. And you could always sense there was something that, you know, I suppose from the outside, you're like, man, how can we, these things that you could see, that you'd love to implement, and I suppose that's where I'm at the moment. To be honest, it's not an easy role either, because you are dealing with the complexities and the moving parts of school, which is really important. And I think that's the biggest thing I had to remember, that it's school first.
Yeah.
Rugby is a part of the program at school, so just making sure we get the balance right for that, especially ourselves, and then making sure that the kids understand that too, that school life is first and rugby's under that, and we just got to try and balance both to be just for the kids to get a whole understanding of what that is, and really for post school when they leave school is they've got options around them rather than just the one.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's interesting watching, especially you would have seen it throughout the years, how much school rugby has just really just, you know, skyrocketed. And that's not even just for rugby union, that's also for rugby league. And then I guess you've seen the commercialization go, especially since, because you were in the era where it really just started to kick off. I mean, from 95 onwards, you know, that's where, you know, you started getting the contracts and the sponsors started jumping on quite heavily. Now we're at a point where our first 15 jersey probably has just as many sponsors, you know, as for some of those first teams.
For sure.
Watching it grow, where do you think, you know, where do you see rugby at now in the strength of, you know, sport in New Zealand at least?
Look, I think it's the grassroots is still important. I still think there's an important factor that we are missing. The grassroots is huge, and you know, we are heavily commercializing the top, and understandable that that's a flagship team. Is you know, your super sides, your All Blacks, and that's fine, and it's just finding a way, what is a model that's going to benefit our grassroots, because the kids are still across the board, they love the game immensely, you know. Where it gets a little bit complicated, I suppose, is where schools probably don't are varied in their resources to run programs, you know. As such, we're fortunate at Kings that we can. But it's, you know, for other talent at schools in little areas, how do they grow from when they finish from club into the next step? You know, if they don't go to a top school, how do we fund those schools that aren't, that probably have got the talent and could probably keep those kids, but probably haven't got the resources to do so? So it's huge. And the kids, like, you know, the kids are getting bigger and bigger, and you would have known in your time too. And because I suppose they're exposed to specialist training early, they're built like brick houses, mate. It is quite intimidating when you stand beside school kids, and we're coaches now. You know, thank God I wear all my jackets and stuff, because those boys are popping muscles out of their jerseys, and it's quite scary, you know. But that comes with the effect around their collisions are tougher. Yeah. You know, they're much fitter, they're faster. But like I said, I always go back to finding the passion has got to be within around the game. And, you know, like the outcome in the product is becoming a professional. But I feel like at times if you lose that sense, and you probably might have felt it at some point where it becomes a chore to get up, you know, training, you know, that job factor, yes, it is. But I think if you don't have that love and passion to really grow in the game and love it, then it does fade away if you don't get 100%. To a point where success is different. And if you're not getting selected for certain teams, how demoralizing they can be for yourself, and you lose yourself within. So that's a big era where I feel where we try and really push with our kids. That's why that balance part is important for those kids. But all the same, mate, like the game and first 15 rugby, the skill level, the abilities of some of these kids is unreal. And it seems to just getting higher and higher in terms of what they can do.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've been quite school orientated when it comes to like my understanding of rugby, just because of obviously the system and how we did it there. And I've been out of the game for what, maybe a year and a half or 2 years now. But I've been going a lot because well, Nika's boyfriend plays for Ponies.
Oh, nice.
And so every weekend, that's pretty much the main games I've been going to. But actually, it's given me a new massive appreciation for club footy.
Yeah.
Because even when I was a kid, I didn't really play club footy. I was playing soccer. And so, yeah, I was playing football. And, like, I never really got around it. But, like, watching how big club footy is and, like, especially, I guess, for clubs, I went to the Pakuranga versus Ponies game a couple of weeks ago. But, like, you know, when you look up at the Pakuranga club, you know, on that balcony when everyone's sitting, all the old boys sitting there and, you know, the community really gets around. And it actually shows, like, that's kind of the true nature of rugby in New Zealand, you know. That's really... The grassroots level is really where it all starts, and that's kind of the seed to it all, eh? And
absolutely.
I guess that's where it develops.
Oh, no, totally, Lauren. Like you said, I mentioned that I came back from Japan when I finished, and the role was of director of rugby was there. Not really knowing really whether that was the thing that I wanted to do, but obviously it was the easiest thing coming off, especially my era of guys. When we finished playing pro rugby, there was an immediate stop and thinking, well, what the hell next? You know, what's going to be next for... For myself, but thankfully the Pakuranga United Rugby Club offered me the opportunity to be the director role, but also as a premier coach.
Mm.
And I suppose, again, I've always been an advocate for club rugby. I loved it when I was at school. You know, my junior club rugby is East Tamaki Rugby Club all my life. And then when I went to Kings, the brothers were playing at Otahuhu, my older brothers. So I went to Otahuhu Rugby Club. So it's always been a big part of me. Mm. And what you kind of describe is why I love the game. Mm. It was always the factor of the old boys before sitting up there, cheering you on, and then being able to sit back and have a beer with them and just really share stories.
Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest things was in my life growing up was listening to those stories and seeing the passion and the pride they had for their club. Yeah. And, you know, and it can get tedious, I suppose, with our young generation nowadays when they say, oh, in my day, you know, that's the worst words that the kids can hear. But the truth is, like, when you hear about it, you feel that the love that they do have for the game, the reason why they played the game for so long.
100%.
But it is like, I really feel that's still a missing part where, because we have got clubs that are really like Ponies, phenomenal. You know, Pakuranga United Rugby has fought hard to be where they're at.
Yeah.
Great community. You see the resources and facilities they have. It's first class, and it's got a special part of my life because it's really helped me kind of work resources, but also when all our Pasifika kids were coming out of school, I was able to, you know, it was harder to do with my junior club rugby East Tamaki to help. I came back from Japan and always kept helping when with East Tamaki, but I found the turnover was always real quick.
Yeah.
The resources was hard. Coaches were in and out. And it was tough, but when I was at Pakuranga, the resources they had around. And then it was just a new club to really feed in our kids to come, but it was a real understanding of if the kids were to come, what would the club look like for them? Because it's going to be totally foreign from what they're used to. But I think when I left, I think Grant Hanson, Buff, who became director of rugby over there, has done a fantastic job alongside the chairman and the president and the board. They just have a great vision.
Yeah.
And because it's in the area they are, out east, they have fantastic community backing from everyone, and hence why their programs have gone really high. So there is definitely, a huge gap between your top six clubs, I'd say, top six or seven in club rugby, and then the rest probably there's a struggle in terms of resourcing and just trying to get attract players to kind of come back to their clubs.
Mm. I guess on the flip side of that, it's probably nice to see that gap kind of slim down a little bit this year. I mean, we've seen Liston put up some nice performances this year. We also got St. Paul's as well, who have put up some nice performances this year. It seems like, and this is just a look from afar because I don't know really the true, like, you know, the players and scoring, but it looks like it's slimming down a little bit, the gap between schools.
Again, I think we go back to the school resourcing and what they're putting into their programs. And I know for the last 3 years that Liston has been building a program really well. The guys that are coaching, Marath and I can't remember the other name, and also Suri, these guys were at Waitemata when I was coaching at Pakuranga.
They know
the game well, you know, Brent Simmons and them, they know the game well. They know how to build a program. So they've really worked hard and been able to get these kids to probably build some belief. And and so it's no surprise that, you know, in a year, I suppose that Carlton has a young team that Liston can rise to the occasion and come through.
Yeah.
And last weekend, we know we got a valuable lesson amongst playing St. Paul's. That they've been the same as well. Understand that league is really huge at this school and probably just trying to balance those players that to be able to do both and create an opportunity. But I think this year, I know JP Famasili had built a program. He's gone to Howick and Asiata's come through from Sacred Heart. And we saw it last weekend, how passionate these kids are. And it's great for the game that, you know, at any given time, is what we said to the boys, if we don't prep well and we don't come in with a mentality that we've got to work and go through our process that we've been practicing, that a team like St. Paul's will turn us inside out. And they did, you know, like they had their game for about 25 minutes. Yeah. We're just fortunate enough that we had enough grit and then found a way to come out and then come out the other end. But, you know, we left that pretty well beaten up and bruised, which is fantastic. But like you said, it's great for the game that some of these schools have really closed these gaps. Mm. And it's going to be, again, an awesome and interesting competition as we go through.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be good, man. Over the years, I think the experience as well for not only the players within the teams, but the younger guys that are going to grow into those jerseys, they get to see, we can give these schools a crack.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing with this, with the younger generations coming up. Well, you know, there really are a generation that need to see the field to go, you know? So for me, when I see... We know that if we do it well enough, then the younger generation of kids that are coming up will follow suit.
Yeah,
so
100%.
I think when we spoke off air around, you know, creating boundaries and really, I suppose, getting the real disciplines of the kids to understand these consequences and actions they do. Mm. So really think about that. And then obviously behavior is always another part. And if we do that right and you're the flagship team, then the kids will love to follow suit. And then not only that, the teachers will start to back it and then the parents and supporters. So there is an on-flowing ripple effect if you get it right at the top. And I suppose that's probably been the pleasing part. Being part of our first 15 management and led by Ian Robinson, that we're able to have these things installed. I think we've got Taufa Osaya to feed as well, a Tongan dad, Bradley's dad. He's got a lot of mana behind him. Yeah. You know, we found out from a Wesley College year where they went 19-0.
Yeah.
So he brings a lot of that that those kids didn't know.
Yeah.
But just his nature, his understanding of culture and values in his Tongan culture has really been a nice set for us to create this environment for the kids around having boundaries, making sure that schoolwork's not the same, make sure we respect. And if you don't, then these consequences, because we're part of the school, we're still King's College, and the first 15 is a program of King's.
Yeah, 100%. Sweet Doko, well, we'll rewind the clock a little bit. You talked about it. East Tamaki was your first rugby club. Obviously, South Auckland born and bred. Where'd you grow up? And
so,
especially?
So actually born in Tonga. Yep. I was born in Tonga, but pretty much grew up in Ōtara since I was two.
Nice.
So Ōtara was home, 148 East Tamaki Road. Ooh. Just right there is a child care centre now, but it's straight across the park. Which I suppose
the
slide park, the big slide park, Ōtamariki Park.
Yeah.
We're just across the road, dodged those cars. Well, back then there wasn't many cars on the road, but as we grew up, everyone started having households. So crossing the road was already practicing your sidestep to get to the other side. Went to East Tamaki Primary with my brothers, and that was before Yendara was open. So once my brothers all went to Ferguson, I was standard three, which was year five back then. My sister was starting school, so mum and dad wanted me to go to Yendara, so we ended up Yendara. Went to Ferguson Intermediate out there on Ferguson Road for my Form 1 and 2, and then fortunate enough to play Roller Mills that they had back then, Auckland East Roller Mills. And then,
did that count as East?
So we were East, so South was part of East. So we became East Roller Mills, and then... and then from there, met this family, the Willises.
Yeah.
Rod and Sue. I was playing alongside Ben, their son. Me and him became good friends. Mum and dad, they decided, look, we'll give you an opportunity. And part of it, I tell the story, it was like many people knew it was around rugby and what have you, but that was an outcome of something they saw in the house. Like, I stayed with them every holidays, and most of those holidays, like we do, we didn't get much when we're in Ōtara, you know, you got living with large families, you don't have a bedroom, you know, so, but little things around what we did, you know, the dishes and taking your plates.
Oh, 100%.
This was a shock to, this was a shock to the Willises because, you know, mum would usually all do everything, and because of those little acts, I suppose, that's in our culture and in our values, they then decided, look, let's give this young man a young boy, an opportunity, and that's how the King's College opportunity came about. There wasn't anything as a scholarship back then, so it was funded fully by all collegians, and I think it was from the Willises as well, and they already had two boys, so huge on their shoulder, and hence why they'll forever be grateful for that family, and I call them mum and dad. But then went to King's College, and again, a whole different world, as you know, man. Coming from out south,
100%.
Catching
man.
The bus with the De La Salle boys, and then all believing that I don't go to Kings. But you know, like, it probably the first year was always gonna be tough, kind of navigating.
Yeah,
being in a school as prestigious as it was, with everything they had, and then hop on the bus back to Ōtara, where you know, look, it wasn't like tough being in Ōtara. It was just really. It is what it was, like large 100%. Families and church and faith and everything else. So those are like the humble beginnings and leading into Kings, but all the same, just opportunities that were created that I was able to take.
Mm, yeah, 100%. I think opportunity is exactly the word, eh? I just still remember the first time at Kings when I walked into kind of my first, I think I was what year, 6 or 7, and the first birthday party, and he was having it at his house, and you know, he's like, just so oblivious to the whole
100%.
Like, just a whole different lifestyle, and so we're driving over, and then like already this like a half an hour drive because we're going from Ōtara to Riviera, and so we're like, oh sweet, and then open the gate, and I just remember walking and looking around like, oh my God, this is like, what the hell? They're just a massive ass house, but the exact same thing, eh? Just like taking your ipples to the sink and things like that. Just,
that's right. Yeah. And then I think that's always a true measure of, I suppose, our upbringing with our parents and our grandparents and those before us. Not losing those values is huge, because at a school like that, it's built within complexities, to be honest. 100%. And if you're not strong enough in who you are, you could get lost, which I've actually seen with some kids that have come through the gates. 100%. You know? So having that support is really important. And I'm like I said, if it wasn't for the Willises, was definitely my first support people, but also the headmaster at my time, John Taylor, the late JT. He was huge. He was huge in terms of kind of understanding of my upbringing, calling me in the office just to talk, to settle, able to create a scholarship for my brother the following year, knowing that having a sibling at school will help settle me more. And then from there, like as the years came, and then first 15, I think we just started to really organically move into that space. And then I think the agreement was, by the time I came to my last year, it was like, I don't care about your rugby anymore. I want you to get a bursary.
Nice.
So it was like, so he really did have a feel and understanding that, yes, we have you for rugby, but again, like we said, the school offers so much more.
Yeah.
How do I get you to be part of that more rather than just that? So those things, look, they're huge within us, and especially for our younger Pasifika kids that we all get through now. Mm. Now that we've got over 100 Pasifika kids in the school, right?
Yeah.
Which is huge, when I came back to get my honours tie and I walked into a haka, I was like, hey, what's going on here? We only had the old original haka, which I don't want to repeat because it brings back trauma to some of our boys. But, we actually had a Māori group, all I remember saying to the headmaster, I was like, wow, man, sucks up being away too long, because you're giving away scholarships like it's nothing nowadays. And everyone laughed, but it was just so beautiful and humbling, I suppose, to see how far the school had come.
Oh, 100%.
How far they've absolutely accepted Pasifika students coming in, and then even to what it is nowadays, where we have a kapa haka group and we have a Tongan group to perform in the last couple of years of Polyfest. Yeah. So huge strides and awesome, like awesome to see.
How many bus figures do you think were at the college renewal there?
Mate, I could probably 10 of us.
Really?
Like there was not many. There's I just remember, if I can remember right, it was the Foliakis that were there when I was there. There was Supi and Mahe when I first went in. Then there was the two noble sons, so Kalanivalu Fotofili, so Dipiti and Theo. They were the other two Tongans. And then we had some Samoans. There was a Von Reich. There was a Retzlaff. Wilmerson Jensen. Jensen was he's part of one of our boys when we were through. And I think, that's the ones that I remember, like I said.
But you're putting it on a hand, like.
Yeah. You can put it on your hand. I wasn't joking.
Oh, man.
I wasn't joking. So, you can probably understand the fear when you walk through those gates even more.
Yeah.
And you look around and you come from Ōtara.
Yeah.
You come from a class that's predominantly Pasifika Māori, and then all of a sudden you're stuck in a classroom now that you're the actual minority in the corner and that. So that was like buzzy as such,
Isn't it crazy that like how much the world opens up, once you walk through the gates of the school, everything just like, honestly, just like your horizon kind of just.
Oh,
like,
huge. And, even more so to that time that you guys were at school, of how many kids. And even then I was like, man, it's growing. It's great to what it is now, to have an outset. But it's so awesome. But I suppose we still have a responsibility, old collegians and even part of the school now, is to really make sure that the kids have get the best of it. And now I think the school's doing a fantastic job with different teachers holding up these Pasifika groups, making them understand around effort grades, but also, where they can get their marks. So it's just really putting some emphasis on, do things well now and it'll just give you a bigger step as you leave the school 100%. As such, which I think it's massive, man, because as you know, when you leave those gates in your year 13.
Big bad world.
And all of a sudden it just goes fast.
Yeah.
It picks up and pace like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, 100%. So playing at school, you went from roller mills, going straight into the college and obviously with the helping hand by some cool families and also the college. What kind of rugby were you playing before that? Was it just club and then roller mills?
Yes. So club was all, because that's all we played. Yep. So club, bare feet. Early mornings in the frost, tackle. There was no ripper.
So
it was straight tackle, and it was in grades. So you was like, I think you couldn't play, I'm pretty sure in my time it was like 7 or 8. They didn't have any under fives or six ripper and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's my fond memory, like around 8 was when I kind of started playing. Dad was a former rugby player, so he trained us up to play. So we were excited as kids to go and play. So all my club rugby was East Tamaki, and then you just play all the intermediate, all primary school tournaments that they had, or little games like we used to. When I was at East Tamaki, we'd play Rongomai and Dawson, and then those tournaments, and then that was that until I went to King's College rugby, and then at that time you could still play both club and.
Because
they had under 14s and 15s at club, but school was always first for me. Right. So started at fifth grade and then fourth grade in my fourth form.
Were they just weight split?
So what the fifth grade is what fifth grade is now.
So
fourth grade was probably where 1R, probably just under 1R.
Yep.
So it was just a little...
Like 85 under.
Yeah. And then after that it was open grades. So I played fifth, fourth. Then I played first 15.
So year first 15, year 11, year 12, and year 13.
Year 13, but then I came back and did year 13 again.
Because
I was a young year.
Yeah.
Because funny story wise, because mum and dad shifted to Australia in my last year, before my last year, and so at the end of that year, I said to dad, "Oh look, I'm still young enough. Should I go and do a year in Tonga?
Yeah,
go to Te Pau College and play." And he goes, "Really?" And so so we went on a tour. What we call a Sutaka team, Auckland, all our Auckland Tongan groups. We went across, played, and I went and had a look at Te Pau College. And we went and looked at the boarding fraternity and I went, ooh, look. It's like the mattress, like, is that a mattress? I don't know.
See, what house were you in at Kings?
Marsden.
Oh, cool. So, Marsden.
We went and he took a tour and the plantation, and we get up at 5, we do work at the plantation, Lockwood, and all sorts, which is going to be fine. But then JT got whiffed that I went and had a look and was interested to go back. And he said, "Oh, well, you can come back again.
I went,
"Right." And then at that time, that's when we agreed that, okay, if you come back, you have to get your bursary though before you leave. So nice. I came back then and then obviously kept in the first 15 that year. So that was, 4 years in the first 15.
That's mean. Your first year in the first 15, do you remember much of like the guys on your team and playing?
Absolutely. Oh, look, there was like, my brother was still there. So
yeah.
So I was first five. My brother was centre. Matt Willis was second five.
Oh, really?
So
oh,
Matt Willis was second five. In 91, I had Mapasua on one wing. Brian Mapasua is another Ōtaraka that came through later in the year.
Is he related to Silala in that? Or?
No, oh, I think just maybe a distant relative.
Yeah.
I think Duncan Marshall and on one wing, and then Kyle Brown at fullback, which was Kyle Brown was a cricket player, lefty, fast bowler, but he was a lefty fullback. So we had a great back line. It was just like, it was so new, you know, like huge, like nervous and scared all the same time because I was only 15.
Mm.
But it was exciting at the same time, so playing fun, grandma. Man. I know, mate. Like, it was like, I was just a young kid. So, no, like, I think that year I just, there was no emotional part to it. So I could just play.
Yeah.
So, you like, and I knew my brother was at centre, so I just kind of, like, safe as houses, man, wow, you know. Man. But it was, like, you know, I was a little kid in that group, and you come up against some names who later became Samoan representatives, All Blacks, and in terms of the sheer size, you know, and the dominance they had, it was freakish. But I suppose it's similar to what it would be for some of the kids of today, so... But amazing, amazing time, and school rugby will always be an awesome memory.
In my
journey in rugby.
Yeah, what would you consider your kind of play style? Were you quite like off the cuff as a young player?
Yeah, definitely. That's why I got shifted from first five. So I played first five, and if I see something, I'll just go.
I'll go and
kind of control from there. And then when I remember going in the following year, the coach goes. He pushed I think it's Benny became halfback, pushed the halfback to 10 and then pushed me to 12.
Yeah.
And then I just stayed at 12.
Which was
good for me because kicking wasn't really a thing for me.
I just
always run and stuff. But yeah, I was always off the cuff and then obviously played to a certain structure. But if we saw something, we'd go.
It's on. Far. That would have been so fun. Man, I can't even imagine how, you know, especially like then. We're talking like no phones, like not like every day on your phone at lunch, and that you're talking players they really just love playing and throwing the ball around and just like
lunchtimes, and I see the boys do it now, but lunchtime forever with the ball, you know, we'd be passing it around the court and they'd get told off, oi, put the ball back.
So
you know, there's always different things, and I think the other side to it was everyone was playing different sports. You know, rugby was part, and then like, yeah, I had a crack at cricket. I thought it was backyard cricket, but when you go there with the real red ball, but it's all for me, bit of tennis and stuff. But there was all these different games, and kids, I think, was just, they're so much more active. Like you said, because there was nothing, no phones.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys just like to be outside. You know, as soon as the classroom was done, everyone was out doing something outside, and just engaging that way.
Yeah. I always think about this and like just like subconsciously. I always think this is why kind of especially like the old school, like the older generations and their way of play. I always think they have better instinctual play just because they had it, like literally just because they had a rugby ball in their hands more often, as opposed to just having it when you go to SNC in the morning and then, you know, training after school. Like when you have the ball in hand and you're mucking around, I reckon that's where a lot of the instincts really kick in, as opposed to just kind of the hand-picked players that are kind of blessed, you know, your Calvin Harris Tavidas and, you know, all those guys like that are just really, like they're blessed with their skills and instincts, you know.
Blessed.
But, you know, like we're talking especially your generation, man, every player just loved throwing the ball around and just had good instincts to the game. And how to see the game.
It's so true, Lauren. Like that was a big part of our life, eh? Like, you know, and you can't compare because there was nothing.
Yeah.
You had to be outside. You know, you played your backyard cricket, you played all these different games. You just wanted to play. I think play was just organically done.
Yeah.
Streets with just the light and they'll just play touch there.
Yeah.
And everyone knew, you know, there's a call, they'll come out and the kids will go back to their houses. So I find even now the things that we did naturally, organically,
We
have to coach.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
There's things that we'll just do. Yeah. And that, like you said, our instincts and all that was heightened because of the games we played before, because they don't do that, screens and different. And there's just so many other things or options that kids get into, you know, and a big part of it obviously is screens. So, and so you kind of, once you get the understanding of it, then you don't get as frustrated. Mm. But what you do is, what is it around, I suppose it becomes the art of coaching of what is it then that I can get kids to engage in, But at the same time, the engagement in the game, but how do we make them learn and understand the game through that? And where does it fit into the bigger picture when you go into like your actual plays and all 100%. That? So that's always been that's always been a part of, I suppose, coaching, where I see the good coaches do really well, you know, they're able to attract and engage the young ones because they're kind of down in their world and understanding that. I think for some coaches that I see apart, they're so driven their way that it's not connecting with our generations, you know. And that's I actually learned that, honestly, when I was coaching, I learned that from working with Trey. So coaching him when he wanted to become when he wanted to be a Roller Mills player. Firstly, I remember taking him. I said, "All right, I try to train him like my dad. Let's go." Get your runners. We were living at Eastern Beach. There's heaps of steps and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember taking him, his stomach got sore. He said, stitches. He said, shh, and we were running in the man. I was in tears. So when we got home, he went and complained to mum and just said, nah. And then I got a growling from Megan, then my ex-wife going, what are you doing? He's not bloody you. And he's not, you know, your dad. And which actually, that hit the heart and although I was still real angry, I was like, man, real soft, man. Yeah. Just grow up, would you?
Yeah.
But it gave me a real learning then. It hit me then, you know, light bulb moment to go, oh, actually, they're it's not wired different. That way.
Yeah, 100%.
And then when he came back to ask around this, I just said, okay, look, let's do it. But I suppose where it went to was like, actually, I don't really care what you do, but if we do things, you just got to give me effort.
Yeah, 100%.
Give me some effort. Give me some engagement, and then I'll make it worthwhile for what we're doing. And because we did it that way, I just started learning more and more off him, of his world.
Yeah.
And then it helped me coach, especially him and his boys and errors around, okay, well, what is it, boys? You know, but I was always hinting and putting things in there for them to understand the game. Why do we do that?
Yeah.
What were you seeing? Yep. You know? And then they could explain and once they understood that, then me and him could watch a game together and we'll just be like questioning. And that's probably one of the best moments that I got was when he wanted to watch footy with me and we'll be able to talk around the game and you'll ask questions. Oh, why did he make that decision? Yeah. What do you think he made there?
Yeah.
You know, that's when then our relationship grew around that. And then I just knew at some point when he was going to play first 15 that I just needed to be a dad.
Step back
and I think that I was really proud, even though, and I get this and I understand the passion from parents. I really do understand it because I've been there, but I find it that can be more detrimental to the kids' progression and development if they're always kind of critiquing and
a fine line rolling between passion and pressure. Yeah.
100%.
Bro. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, definitely. 100%. You're definitely right. The kids just aren't really wired like that these days.
No.
Some of them need it.
Yep.
Some of those kids need it. Yep. Like, you know, because some of the kids still have, like, especially if their parents are raised them kind of old schoolish.
Sure.
But you're 100% right in the sense that you just really can't. It breaks some kids, eh?
Breaks
it
will them,
break
bro.
Them, yeah.
And they don't even come back to the game, mate.
Yeah.
They just
finish.
Because they're that kind of wired that if it's not for them, then they'll just go.
They'll just go.
They'll just go, you know?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that's the scary part around, I suppose, the responsibility as coaches. You know, yes, you want to push the kids, but in their own means, finding 100%. What that is and remembering that success looks different to everyone. What I see as success, way different to you, to your parents, to the headmaster, whatever, you know.
Mm. So outside of playing rugby, before we go on to, you know, being a professional, what other sports were you? Did you play any other sports while you were in college?
College, in my first year I played cricket.
Me.
I played for the B team.
Yep.
You know, you had a top third form team and I played in that team. Honestly, because I love backyard cricket.
Yeah.
And I loved cricket back then. It was a golden era in my time of watching cricket. Hadley, Cairns, Chits. So I decided to have a crack at it with the boys. And I was just like, you know, if you went bowling, and I was kind of still getting used to the hard ball with the bat. So every now and then I'd be too scared. So bowled out, you know. So it took a bit, but it was just like if you weren't doing any of those, then you'd just be waiting on the field.
Yeah.
So I just did it for the year in my third form. The second, in my fourth form or year 10, I did tennis.
Nice.
I played on the second tennis team. Again, watching them play, and we played a little bit at home when we went down to the local courts. And so I just gave it a nudge and played. And then by the time came fifth form, I was already kind of doing preseason training with the clubs and stuff. And then they used to have sevens competitions.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd go and run with my East Tamaki crew because my brothers were all playing sevens at Ohu. And me and my other brother, Tony, we couldn't play up there. So we'll go back to other club and run with them and play. So rugby all of a sudden became the turn
summer
around
and
there.
Winter.
Yeah. Summer and winter and just did athletics, you know, during the time at school and did that all the time. And then just became rugby only in my latter years, you know, because the season started to turn over and I was doing more other rugby stuff outside of school.
Yeah, 100%. So once you started getting those full season turnovers, obviously by your last year, your very last year at the college, you've already had plenty of experience under your belt. You understand how the system works, how you need to play to get better. When did kind of representative teams start, getting in
your 16s. So I played in the Roller Mills. Then the following year, they used to have under-14s, make 14s, 15s. I missed – that was probably a kind of year. I think I was in fourth form, year 10, and I went to under-15 trials and it had like some Istola Maka, George Leo Pepe. It had a good group. And I was in that group. And I just didn't trial well. And when I think about it, I probably didn't do the work. Thought I'd just kind of, because I got kind of grew up with these guys, I thought I'd just get in as well. So I wasn't selected that year. But I was only still 14. So another year to go the following year. So the following year I did train hard and came back. But instead of playing 15s, I ended up playing 16s twice. But it was a good reminder because it was just before I became a first 15 player. So I knew, didn't make it in Auckland. So I was like, oh. You know, so it kind of made me kind of train harder. So then I just made reps from their 16s. Then they used to have a New Zealand 16s that year. So,
really? Oh,
so I made New Zealand
16s
and we went to Aussie to play against the 16s there. And then the following year, I made Northern Regions and then schoolboys for 2 years at school and in Auckland secondary schools and stuff.
Schoolboys and Auckland schools.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So they used to have Auckland schools. So you used to have a tournament. Like you used to run a Northern Regional tournament. And 16s were the same. Where you go play Waikato, Thames Valley, King Country, Harbour.
Yeah.
You know, Bay of Plenty. Northern Regional. But you also, when you got to, at your rather than having the Blues, they had the Northern Regions. And we'd have two teams, Northern Region A and B. And you go and play Central Region and Southern Region.
Wow.
So that was the tournament of what, and it was like, yeah, and then from that you'll be selected for schoolboys.
Oh,
so that was where your trials for schoolboys.
Is that all post school season?
They're not through.
Wow.
Through.
Wow, that's a lot of rugby, eh?
Bro, and that's why, like, people ask me, how do I get so many games for Kings? We played a lot of games. And back then, there wasn't really many horrific injuries like what you're getting now, the knees and stuff. Yeah. Very rarely.
Yeah.
You know, but so we had a lot of games. And on top of that, you had, like, so your tournaments were running holidays.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll have even 16s and all these northern regions, they'll run in the holidays. Yeah. And then the second term holidays. And then you'd kind of straight after, in between things, you'll have New Zealand six after the school rugby and that. So
it's keeping you guys on your toes in the holidays, far out.
That's right. And like I said, you'll go right through and play long seasons. But again, because we loved it,
it was
a chore. Everyone was up to, did your best. So even for Northern Regions, they used to have Church College and all the school, like if you get selected to that. Mm. So you'd have about six or eight teams, bro, and you're going to do all the testing and then you have trials, like games, like you'll be waiting for the weekend, you're just constantly training trials and the ones I suppose they started complaining at the end, probably the ones that wouldn't go through.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the rest of us are just like, man, this is unreal, whether you made it or not.
Yeah.
But you knew where you stood with all the guys there because it was the best of the best in the Northern Region that turned up.
It was a product of your hard work and what you're doing in school as well and all that as well.
And look, I always go back to dad's trainings from a young age, you know. And then, like I said, where probably trade took my way of teaching is like hard-nosed approach.
Yeah.
Where my dad's hard-nosed approach was like instilling discipline
and
really totally different areas. But I suppose that's what kind of kept in me to keep chipping away at my craft. And, you know, because I was the youngest out of four, and I tell a story all the time that my three brothers are like way, way better than myself.
Yeah.
Like all four of us got to play super,
yeah.
if I'm really honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The top, my number one, Tevita, he was all rounder, like fast, skill, kick off both feet, goal kick. Sam was like strong, yep, tough, like unrelenting. Tony Brains, skill set. And then of me, I was just like kind of picking everything off those boys and kind of hung with them, learned off them.
Yeah.
And I suppose dad's discipline just got me through and just kind of kept making me work hard to get to the top.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, it's crazy. So was New Zealand schools the pedestal still then?
Yep. Nice. Absolutely. Like you make schoolboys, was like, you know, you make your 16s, but schoolboys, and because they had under 19s as well.
Oh, yeah. Time,
but schoolboys were way stronger than,
yeah,
for some reason,
yeah,
because your schoolboys, boys were, I think the 19s was picked the year after school, but most of the guys, the good ones probably will go Colts.
Oh,
so these
kids
were either picked from club footy and higher, level.
So
you'll find that probably the top talent was still at school.
Fuck, yeah, that's crazy.
So it was crazy.
What would you guys do? Just like Aussie tours and stuff for them?
Yeah, it was always the Aussie tour. So you play there and play at home. So, and awesome, like, and Aussie was like mean.
Yeah. Awesome trip.
They were good.
Yeah.
I know when we won in 16s, we won in schoolboys, but I remember losing with the 19s. We lost with the Colts. So it's like, it was just that kind of era of, you know, where they were really strong.
Do you remember some of the names in your schools? What are some of the...
Oh, I mean, my 93 school probably back line was one of the best. And even the forwards, like I had Scott Hansen, who's the All Black coach, his halfback. I had Carlos Spencer as his first five. I was second five. George Laupepe was centre. I had Kyle Tanana on one wing. Brad Fleming on the other wing.
Yeah.
And then I had Christian Cullen at the back.
Oh my,
and you also had James Kerr, who was on the other wing as well. Yeah, so he was former Crusaders. And then you had, I think, from memory, Anton Oliver was captain and hooker. Trevor Leota was in there. Paul Thompson. We had Royce Willis, Istolomaka, Andrew Blowers, and Jonah. Jonah was number eight. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, number Jonah's eight. Yeah. So my gosh.
That 93 schoolboys were stacked. I think if not all, played super, and then the majority made All Blacks.
All Blacks, yeah. Mm. Man, what a team, man. Yeah. What a team. That would have been a fun trip, man.
Like, it was unreal because, like, Carlos had played Colts that year too.
Oh, yeah. Already.
Him and Anton. And they were still at school.
Man,
they were like 17.
Crazy.
And they'd both come off playing a series against the Aussie 21s. And I think Aussie had like George Gregan in them.
Wow.
And then they came back down to us. And then we were just like, well, these guys are next level.
It's crazy.
But just amazing. Amazing to play alongside. But I suppose that's the other thing you have to kind of contain within yourself is kind of how do you make sure that you stay confident even amongst everyone with that talent.
Yeah, 100%.
And how do you, because you do, like, I used to lose myself, like, man, I've got Lossie inside, I've got Georgie on the outside, where does my game fit?
Yeah.
But you've got to come to that
quickly.
Yeah, you've
got to believe yourself. Yeah,
and believe, you know. And I did.
Yeah.
And then once you do that, the enjoyment's even better. Mm.
Yeah, I reckon it's definitely something, well, and I don't know whether I'm speaking just because I did it, used to do it to myself, but like, you just have to really back in your ability. Because I had that a lot as well. I remember, just because of like, I think it's probably because of like social media and stuff. But like when you'd have like teams and you'd look around and like it's all these guys that you know are talking to scouts and they're talking and you're like, do I still like, you know, like I don't know, like am I going to be in the shadow or the door? Should I just give it a crack? But I reckon there's so many kids out there, if they really unlock that belief in themselves, man, they're just...
But you're right, like it's hard with social media because, you know, like top 200. So for us, it wasn't, we didn't have that, but we knew.
You knew
that the voices and chats would come around, oh man, watch out for that guy. This is Christian Cullen. This is Spencer. Yeah. But you knew as well, like, man, if you don't, if you don't stand up, you're going to get schooled today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you got to back 100%. What you've got to have a go. And
100%.
Right or wrong of it, you know, like you say, you'd rather come off knowing you had a crack and you know what to do next rather than not, you know. Mm.
So what happened after school? What was your first thing after
school? School finished for me and then Megan got pregnant.
Yeah.
And so, but I got an opportunity to go counties.
Yep.
And counties just, I think with that came with jobs because obviously it wasn't professional. So they'll give me a job. And honestly, I went to counties because Auckland was stacked. It was stacked.
Was it counties or Auckland that took Jonah and stuff?
No, nah, Counties was always Jonah.
Yeah.
Jonah was because Wesley College and then went through.
Yeah.
But I was with Auckland through and through, man. Like, I loved it. But,
nice.
But when I went to meet with Ted and Innisfail, mate, like I said, the whole Auckland team was pretty much All Blacks.
Right.
Right? So, and then when Ted said, look, you'll play 21s and we'll just keep an eye on it, I was like, oh, that's fine. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
At the same time, because we played schoolboys with Jonah, he'd rung myself and George Lepepe and kind of said, man, you guys should come to counties. And have a look. And and at that time, I was training with the Auckland Sevens team. And then I thought, oh, man, let me just go and have a check and say, come to the Sevens and run with us. But when I turned up to the Sevens, there was Joey Levedetti, there was Jonah Lomu. They were all playing Sevens. And I was like, nah, see Auckland, I'm going to counties with these boys.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just like how welcoming and open they were to us coming along as youngsters. Yep. I was only 18, 19. And so I went in, decided to go to counties.
Nice.
Played Sevens and then played NPC that year. Following year.
You played for NPC your first year out of school?
Yeah, yeah. So I played counties. I played fullback, dog.
My gosh.
Probably dropped everything too. Because I was in midfield, but we had no fullback. And he said, go play fullback. Man, you're 18, 19.
Man, that
would you say no? Until you ran out, because NPC was huge then.
Yes,
man.
Massive.
The crowds were awesome.
Eden Park was getting full at Pat, NPC, Pat, yeah.
Yeah, like Ranfurly Shield. We played Ranfurly Shield game. Oh, chocker. Gosh. Chocker. So, like, as a youngster, man, as a teenager, like, again, that feeling of just like so blessed to be in this space. All these guys, like Jonah, Joelle on the wings, you know, playing with some Errol Brain, all stalwarts of counties rugby, which were awesome. And then the game turned professional the following year in 96.
96.
And again, I was just working a blur into it because I know I've only just come into the scene as a young 15-year-old. That year I got called to go to Tonga. I was working at a bank, ASB Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, following Jonas' footsteps. Yep. You know, he was at Pakuranga, but I was at Beta Drive in Mangere. And then Tonga rang in to ask me to go play Sevens. Back then, playing Sevens, they didn't have those IRB tournaments.
Oh, okay.
So it was invitational. So I could go represent Tonga without being kind of attached to them. Yep. I could still play for New Zealand as such. So I went and played a tournament in Hong Kong. Loved it. Again, experience.
Man.
And then when I got back from that, I got called into the Crusaders in 96. So then went across the Crusaders. Amazing. Played centre. Again, young man, just really enjoying, you know, turning 20. Mm.
Did you play a lot of those Southland schools through school?
Oh, no, we didn't play any of them. We didn't used to play Otago and that. The only team we played, was Christ College.
We had
a traditional with Christ.
Yeah.
But most of the southern schools I'd only meet in the regional tournaments.
Oh, see, I went down to Southland. Right.
Sorry, I went down to so after the Crusaders, I was still at counties. The following year, because counties were stacked, my agent and coach said to me, go down to Southland because there's an opening in Highlanders.
So
I went down to Southland and a few months later I got called into the Chiefs.
Oh,
so 97, I played Chiefs. Then I came back, NPC with Southland, and then I got my first proper contract with Highlanders in 98.
And that's a proper full.
And then I stayed with, and then that's the team that I suppose I hold dear to my heart.
Yeah.
And they gave me the opportunity and then had four awesome years with them.
Yeah. So what was the first year you fully moved out of home first? Did you move out of home even working at the bank straight out of school? Oh, cool.
So I pretty much independent. And I was pretty much independent when mum and dad, they were in Aussie. And I ended up staying with a family called the Karams.
Yep.
So Richard and Joe Karam was their dad. And that
rings a bell, Joe Karam.
He was the lawyer for the Bain case.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. Case. Yeah, I was going to say that rings a bell. He was an All Black as well.
So he was one of our coaches. He coached me in 93. And because I wanted to stay in the house, I didn't actually, because I was meant to go boarding at Averill with the Willises.
Yeah.
But I was... You know how strong house is, man. And I was already too entrenched in Marsden.
Yeah.
So, and Joe's boys were in Marsden. So he got me to go and stay with them. They were living at Ardmore.
Right.
Fantastic. And I think it was probably a great move because, again, that year was really important for my schoolwork.
Yeah.
So he helped me a lot. Got my license because, you know, driving around with the big license in Ōtara. Said, hey, you can't drive anywhere unless you get your license.
Yeah.
So I got my learners and stuff. And then that's pretty much, So pretty much, because I had that year away with living apart from mum and dad.
So you're pretty well independent.
Pretty much well independent.
Nice.
Then I had a child early, Tanika, And then we pretty much, while I was at Counties, we had a little flat. And then after that, I was pretty much there, Southland. So I pretty much
So was Mum and Nico going everywhere with you as well?
They came down to Southland. They came down to Southland. Unfortunately, you know, poor thing, we stayed out in the farm area. I didn't let them read the fine, you know, the fine print on the old contract thing. But it was because I went down for a club. I worked at a... the culinary meatworks.
Oh, yeah.
Matauro Meatworks down there.
Nice.
So I was staying at a place called Wyndham, man, crazy. Like small country town, but I was playing for their rugby team.
Yeah.
And so it was like a little farm area. I do feel real bad now. Paul Taneko opened the door to be a big cow. I was like,
on the hook?
Sorry, family. And you look at town, we're 40 minutes away from Invercargill. So it's fair to say, because I had to go Chiefs, I came back, I played Colts that year. Yep. Came back, and then Meigs got a job back up in Auckland.
Ah, I see.
Which was fair enough. And then her and Taneko came up to Auckland and played NPC.
Played fully.
Played NPC, went into Highlanders, and then came back up when I could. Man. And then they moved down to Dunedin when I was at the Highlanders.
All right, so let's talk your at the meatworks. Did you learn at it? What were you doing at the meatworks,
bro? I just did gut trays. All I did was mainly tour, and again, like I took a photo like with all the butchery gears.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, you're gonna do butchery? I said, no, bro, I'll cut my fingers. Gave him back the knives and stuff, and just stayed on the gut trays. Bro. Oh, but again, just a real experience of work. Yeah. And how the different people work, and they talk. I mean, amazing facility, understanding how it all works, going down right down to where they're culling the big cattle in there, and all the different processes they go through up to packaging and that. Mm. So I got to see all that. Yeah. Not that I worked much over there. Yeah. I only lasted a month before I got called away to Chiefs, and then I went rugby, and then came back.
Would have been funny though. Would have been
bro. It was an experience, to live in a farm area. Yeah.
That's cool.
Working with people down there. Just, again, rugby just takes you all these different communities.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So let's look at Highlanders here. What was Dunedin like, especially when you first went down there?
Bro, Dunedin's as wild as it is now.
That's crazy, yeah.
But it's so much more loose, you know. All the areas which are all school areas now, I think, but the Guardies, the Bowler, the Casey's, the place was just off the hook. And, you know, like students were still wild. But it was like for us as well as rugby players, we were just part of the community.
Yeah.
So we had big games and we were straight down to the pub with everyone else.
Yeah,
I was 100%. Like, I mean, there was all strong drinking culture.
So this was only 2 years right after school?
Three years. Yeah, so this was 98 by now. Yep.
Yeah, so were there any students there that you went to school with? Yeah, there was, you would have still been there, right?
They were all cracking up, man. Coming up, going, hello. I was like, I know, right? I know, I'm playing now here. Oh, and man. So, and all around, I suppose even when I went on tours and stuff, if we ended up somewhere, buying to get a message in a hotel, bro, give me a call. We're in someone from Kings and school days that are out and about. So pretty much grew into that space really quickly after school, as a 19-year-old, all the way through. So kind of right through to Dunedin. And Dunedin was just amazing, man. Like I think I tend to really flourish in the little places, I find.
Yeah,
you know, it's only because of the community. I think I just really like being part of what the town is, you know, and I suppose that gives me, I suppose, a little bit of a why when I go and play, because you're just so entrenched in the community. You love what they do. You see how passionate and they are, and that's why, like, in time when you played a bad game and they caught it, I didn't care, you know, because it's they're right, you know, and they feel like they're almost part of the team, and I didn't mind that because again, I grew up in that with club footy in there that, you know, like I said, the people that have been in the game or love the game, you always feel like there's something that you always love to give back as advocate of the game. So, Dunedin's like still my home. Like I always, when I fly back, I always feel like I'm home.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So how many caps did you end up racking up for the Highlanders?
48.
All right.
I should have stayed to play two more. I went to the Canes.
All right.
Yeah, and that was the Sunday. And I played 48 straight. Like, I played...
So that two seasons worth?
Four
seasons worth.
Four seasons I played with them.
That's right. Yeah, I was thinking it was 20, but I'm thinking like school. Yeah. Far out, like 16 games a year, ace.
Yeah, bro. So we played in another awesome era for Otago rugby too. You know, when you think about Tony Brown, you think about Jeff Orson, Cronfield, Case Mews, Istolomak, Jeremy Stanley, like Brendan Lane. Like there was just an awesome era of guys. You know the guys that won the 98 NPC? Right. They were all the boys that were, it was all our Highlanders lads and they carved. But it was just fantastic because I think the coach were awesome, Tony Gilbert, Kevin Gloag. Just real good man management, I think, more than anything. I think the technicality stuff, as we know, helped technical Tony Brown is. Yeah. I mean, well, not technical. She just knows the game well and knows how to simplify it.
Yeah.
But he, just the love they had and the way they could produce it and just get the boys on board.
Yeah, 100%.
Had a massive drinking culture. I mean, let's go. And unfortunately, that falls on my lap because I do love a little bit of partying, so I wasn't complaining. It's actually on, you know.
Is that where Party Pete started?
That's where Party Pete came from, bro. So, you know, like, you know, you're always kind of, you're always up for one and down there is no different. Yeah, but just good lads to, you always chew the fat with guys and you just have good laughs. Yeah. And I think
it's a great environment to, you know, especially to grow and, you know, thrive in something that you love because you've got the perfect balance. Yeah,
totally. And with all the, and just be, like I said, it comes back to the people around. They love the game and you can chat and, you know, and you can just be yourself. I think one of the things is you can be yourself.
100%.
Because again, like, you know, it's a massive whirlwind in that space of professionalism, and you can get quite caught out if you kind of can really engulf you into it and swallow you up as such, you know. But having good people around, you can kind of really alleviate and keep it as it is and have some relaxing time as well.
Mm. So obviously, you see, you go over to the Hurricanes after that. What made you move to the Hurricanes?
The Hurricanes was a family move. Nice. Like Megan had got an opportunity for work over there, and it was a fantastic opportunity. Like it was huge. I was in All Black at the time. Tana was there. Was a thinking around playing together, build our relationship because we were really tight and good mates.
Combos.
And how we could build ourselves together to be that that midfield partnership. But it was just unfortunate that the All Blacks future changed as well. But it was, look, I think I it was hard to settle into the group for myself.
Yeah.
I think I compared it too much to what I had in Dunedin, you know, and we were kind of settled back down in Dunedin, but it was just real different. And I suppose my climate to change was really slow. But in terms of the crew, the coaching group that was involved, outstanding. Like I can't fault them. That wasn't the reason why at times that I couldn't I didn't probably perform as best as I could for my time in the Canes.
Yep.
I just felt like I probably didn't settle. I was probably, like I said, I was there by body, but probably my mind was still down in Otago and stuff. Yeah. But then, you know, the fact that I still got to play with Cully, Jonah, Tana, you know, heaps, Lomi Fata, and all the rest of the Spicy and Dooley and them in the back line. It was still a, like, formidable back line, and you never take those things, for granted as such. It's just, I suppose, I was just gutted that I didn't kind of perform the best that I could, that I knew I could for probably an outstanding group. And to be fair, I mean, Colin Cooper came in the following year and he was an awesome coach. Yeah. And then Skucks came on board up on the wall. Mark came on the picture and I thought, okay, it's my time to leave. But he was outstanding too. Like I couldn't fault it. Like it was awesome seeing a young, energetic, strong young man coming into our fold.
Yeah.
But just seeing, oh, man, this kid's going to take it to a different levels. Yeah. As we all know, he's still playing. He took it right up there, and he still is.
Yeah, 100%. So, because before we'll talk about the All Blacks last.
That's right.
So obviously, Hurricanes, and you go. What do you think is the biggest? What do you think was the biggest challenge for you as a you know, especially a younger rugby player in this professional environment? I mean, it's you have to look at it as from a massive approach because I think what the general public see is rugby player. But, you know, there's person, they don't just lace up the boots and then switch off for the rest of the week. I mean, there's a person behind the jersey, you know?
Absolutely. I think some of the big changes when it turned to professionalism was how specific trainings and stuff became.
I see,
In terms of your weights, you know, the dietary requirements became a huge part, you know, like we really had to address drinking issues because, and it was hard, like, the era that I grew up in, I almost caught in between, you know. So still early on, I struggled to kind of get the right balance, you know, because we used to our switch off was totally with the boys, we're on, you know, we're into town, we do. But as we could see where the game was going, you could tell like, oh man, like the travel is starting to play an effect, you know, your promos you have to go and do, you have to be sharp in this. And I suppose probably the biggest challenge for me was getting the right balance in terms of, you know, I advocate for it now, but what is it outside of footy? And I spent a lot of that with family time with Tanika at the time as a baby, and then we had Tiara in Wellington. So that became the natural fit, but it was a struggle for me to really find the balance between getting consumed by everything rugby to what else outside, you know, and then and family was one, but even kind of losing myself, kind of, you know, really finding an area to really target, to kind of switch my mind off.
To really do the things that
require, and probably not really tuned to what life would look like after footy.
If that
was to happen. And never had that. Think, man, I'm 24 now. I can keep going you know.
Do you think maybe it was like, and this is just me thinking, especially because like obviously not a lot of players are blessed like you to have done it, but is it big? Do you think one of us because you just had everything like on a platter for you when you left school? You know, because a lot of young kids, well, the majority of young kids would leave school and be like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing now. Whereas you know, you had the option to pick, you know, your like Auckland and counties and rugby was the option. Do you think maybe I got to the stage where like post footy wasn't even like a.
Oh, you, absolutely. Yeah. You're so right. Look, because everything there was an opportunity. Everywhere I came off. And I think it's fair to say, like, and this is what you do, you create opportunities, but then it's whether you take it or not.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's where our kids get stuck to. You know, there's different things doing, but we're often kept to try and do the most easiest and not fight for something or go somewhere in the opportunity, seeing what that next thing could take. And I feel like, and that becomes, it's not probably just the individual or the young boy's fault. It's around who he has around in terms of the support group that helps him. They're talking with the parents or whoever, their agent or whatever, whoever's giving them advice. And that's a real key part, I reckon, of having those decisions. You know, when you say like in a platter, it's like you've created so much that you can choose, but then who do you talk to make sure that is the pathway that's going to go further to the next? And I felt like I'm lucky and blessed that I had that in my spaces. You got, you know, when I got to, you know, the Talamanu who coached me at counties, helped me out to go to Southland. And then eventually my agent and my manager, who became one of my great friends and still is now, was Bruce Sherrick.
Looked after
a lot of the boys, you know.
I've heard heaps of stories about him on that What a Lad podcast. People always talk about Sherrick.
He's amazing. And I think when you find the right support crew, you just find they're just amazing human beings. And they care and support. And that's all you're looking for. Someone who's going to tell you the truth every time, no matter what. Hey, it's not about his job. His role now, he's actually just looking out for your best interest. And I felt like I found that in the relationship that I had with Bruce at such a young stage, until Bruce became, you know, one of the top agents within the country and the world, you know. So it was cool that I had him on board early, and me and him did a lot of things together. And he was fantastic in pushing me into a light of, man, this is what you need to do. But, you know, us and family and stuff, that, you know, not only your immediate family, you know, your extended family.
A lot of extended family.
But, you know, I was growing up in that space that, you know, you got to look after everyone. And I didn't know how to ever not. But whereas I tried to talk to kids today, like you can. But it was around like let the tree grow, you know, let the tree grow, and then once the tree is being fruits, then you'll be able to share it with everyone around 100%. In a better space, which doesn't put you in a worse off place. More so, especially if you've got a young family, you know. So those are things that I think at my time, if I had that kind back, of down pat, you know, probably would have been a better outcome in terms of once post finished, then things probably would have been in better spaces for me to do whatever that is, you know.
But I guess everyone in hindsight would turn something, you know.
100%.
That's just life. That's just life.
Look back and go, do better. Next time down, trade. All right. Tanika, do better. Don't follow Dan's footsteps, please.
Oh, man, that's funny. Nah, sweet. We won't take up too much more of your time. We'll start closing it out. But obviously, you know, one of the biggest moments in your career would probably be, you know, you're an All Black. You know, I think every kid's dream, especially every young footy player's dream, boy or girl, you know, girls want to be Black Ferns now, boys want to be All Blacks now. What was it like to finally get that call when you knew you were going to end up in the All Blacks?
Mate, look, I often spoke about the selection time. My dad's biggest dream. Like,
yep.
He had four boys. He'd grown. He looked back in his life in Tonga and said, he'll be sweet here in Tonga. But he looked at us and he probably thought, man, I can't see these kids doing nothing out here in Tonga, man. You know, And he was such a, I suppose, he had an aura about him in the game in Tonga. You know, he's part of the 73 team that won against Aussie. And I think playing against the Māori All Blacks and hearing about the All Blacks, he had a real ambition for one of us to become an All Black. So that was the biggest thing. And then it kind of transferred and it made sense around his push for us in training, push for me and keep pushing around school rugby. And I'd see, you know, I think it was and you'd see it too with it when you see your parents working so hard to just make ends meet, to make sure 100%. That you get the best and whatever.
Yeah.
And not only for us at times, it's for all our extended that lived in the house. And I think that was more so for him. So when the call came, I was in South Africa after the semi-final of Super Rugby. We'd just beaten the Stormers. Huge, huge celebrations. And then coming back, and then we knew we had to be down at the foyer. There was a group of us, and we'll get a phone call. And because we were in South Africa, John Hart was going to ring us. And you'll either get told that you were in the All Blacks or you'll be in New Zealand A, which is tough. Like, and there was a massive contingent of us Otagos. We were in the final, and the Highlanders, they were all waiting for this call. And you just get called in. And then obviously when Hardy spoke to me and just said, mate, congratulations, you're an All Black. Man, the world just stopped. And regardless, I was still kind of like a little bit seedy from the night before. You know, I'm like in the head, I was like, am I hearing the right thing?
Yeah.
And you know, in my heart and in my mind was just, man, I need to ring my dad. I need to ring my family. So we were straight upstairs after that, rang dad, and I just told him, hey, dad, our dreams come true. And that moment, we were just kind of silent a little bit and just got hear him crying in the other end. And I was crying too. And then I said to him, Dad, I need some sleep, mate, because we've got to catch the flight to get ready for the final against the Crusaders the following week. But that was it. And then, and it's just amazing. I think, you know, it's an unreal feeling because, like you said, it's all out. We ever won as a young boy growing up, and all you ever see, guys, wearing that black jersey, for me, it was like seeing Michael Jones, Wainga Tuika Mala, you know, Johnny the Shoes. You know, it's just, you know, these are All Blacks of Pasifika that I saw that like us, that I could go, imagine, you know, if these guys can 100%. Make it all, there's no reason why we couldn't. Yeah. But, you know, until you do, like, I was kicking myself, you know, fitting day, you know, taking your photo with All Black gear, you're just going, wow. You know, so that moment of it, I think, is probably the best moment you get. And then I think the reality hits when you go first training and then you go like, right, just, you know, everyone's there, the cameras are everywhere.
So where was the first camp you had to go to?
First camp was here in Auckland. So it's here in Auckland, and then we flew down to Christchurch.
Yep.
So we're here in Auckland, Christchurch, because the first game was against New Zealand A.
Against
New Zealand A. So I played in that one. And it was tough because that first year was always going to be hard because I was contesting with Daryl Gibson and Lama Aramea. But it was tough in a sense. If you're not part of it, it's hard.
Far out. Was Lums and the Aramea in the in that lineup with you as well? We were playing against Alama.
We were in the Wolex together in 99. Yeah, and went through to the World Cup. So it was like a long season being part of it, and that's all cool. But I think if you're not right in it, like in terms of starting or playing, it gets hard because you feel like, you know, like anything.
Yeah.
feel like a spare part, and what do I deserve to be here, or why am I here?
Yeah.
And it was tough because, like, I felt like I was playing some of my best rugby and I just wanted to continue.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, man, at that year, I just wanted to go and play some NPC and then come back up to All Black rugby. But, hey, all the same, it is what it was. And you know, World Cup was fantastic to be part of in 99. I know, seeing that, you know, unfortunately we got dealt to by the French. And then, but it was just awesome to be, you know, amongst it in the black jersey at a World Cup.
Yeah.
And then came back and had two more years and fortunate enough to have 2 years where I was actually in there and amongst playing those tests. And that was just phenomenal. Like, you know,
just living the dream, eh?
As an All Black. And there's, you know, there's getting selected and then being part of it. And I think the next step is then when you start to own it, that you are meant to be there, then whole different level of the game. Because the game, test rugby, is different to any other rugby. And, and of course it would be, because it's the pinnacle of the game.
What do you think was the biggest difference, you reckon, from?
The pace of the game. Like everything like your physicality, everything is just another heightened notch. Because everyone's just so zoned into it, mate, you know, like, so for me, it was just getting my head around accepting, again, that self-belief thing.
Yeah.
Like, you deserve to be a man. Yeah. And you got to kind of, put yourself out there to play. Yeah. And once you start to do that, and then the game starts to unfold, and then you're just like, man, let's go. This is awesome. I want to do more.
You see your game develop a lot in that time?
Absolutely. And you start just to understand, especially because we were coached by Smithy at the time, can kind of see how he's trying to unfold what we're doing, you know, like he really gave us the power around understanding, seeing, questioning, so to really get great understanding of what we're doing rather than having that instinct, but having a little more kind of structured instinct as such that you see 100%. Go, or, you know what I mean? And keep to this and buy time at times to really kind of, I suppose, trying to teach us how to do the chess game at times,
rather than
just go da-da-da-da and roll. So we kind of got to that, and then like I said, like really comfortable with Lama and then comfortable with Tana. So it was just a shame where, you know, like the coaches changes. I felt like in my heart that we were on the road of something special.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, to the 2003 World Cup.
Yeah.
But wasn't meant to be.
Because the chemistry, you know, you build up slowly.
And the whole group was starting to feel, you know, like, because we come post-era of that great, you know, 95, 96, 97 team. 98 was a struggle, 99 then. I think from 99, Hardy had done some stuff there. Then 2000, 2001, we're starting to really kind of bite into to who we are and our own as a group. And I think if we go in another couple of years, I think we're going to see some special. Yeah, because guys was just starting to, like, you could feel it. Like, it was just like guys were really starting to really attract each other. You know, like, everyone was starting to, I suppose, alleviate where they came from as super sides and start to become.
And it's so important to have those combinations.
Oh, man, it's unreal. Like, you can just see it when you see the Mertz Marshall, you know, that combination. We can see it with the Tana, Cully, Jonah, you know, the back three, you know. So I was lucky as a midfielder. I made it a personal thing to really be adaptable.
Yeah.
So whoever it was, whatever my game, just
inside or out.
Yeah, whatever, whether it was inside at 12, was outside, what is it, the game that I had? And I just wanted to make sure I stayed true to what I was good at.
100%. So,
and that was like hiding from defense.
Yeah.
hiding from guys who get tackled. Just like, come on, magic feet. Work. Step.
So what did it mean to you? And then it was just to be an All Black, you know, an established one as well.
I think I think the hardest thing was, for a while there, was hard when you get dropped and given reasons and you're not really accepted. You know, you don't accept those reasons, and that's a you thing, and it takes a bit to really, so you kind of miss out on what was glorious at the time, and you just keep thinking, why didn't I do this and that, and that took a while for me to get over. But I think when I look back now, I'm just like part of this unreal, prestigious club, honoured to be around those great names that are above it. I mean, you know, I get a kick when I go to reunions and I see it, but what I love now is that I do feel real part connected, of it, and I can go and 100%. Connect with all those lads and just kind of be one. And it's, you know, because it's something that our country hold dear in their hearts. And in the group, like I said, we grew up on it, we saw it on TV, and then to be part of it, that feeling will never go away. And I think for me, it's like for my dad and then my family and all those that have supported me, I think that was a cool thing that, you know, those people that all had a part of it.
Yeah.
You could say, like, yeah, you know, thanks, guys. Yeah. This is, you know, my give back to everyone that's helped me along that journey.
Yeah, 100%. Because, you know, I think when people look at All Blacks, a lot of them see just the short-term build-up to being an All Black.
Yeah.
But, you know, being an All Black's kind of made in the moments of when Dad was training you as a young kid and, you know, when you put on the jersey, when you went out with frosty feet and stuff like that, you know, that's really where the All Blacks are made, eh? And I think now that you've had the jersey, you're an established All Black, you've contributed so much to rugby, especially here. But then also back in helping in Tonga, I mean, especially with the Barbarians work, you know, helping the culture thrive here and things like that. I mean, man, it's impressive stuff. And I think from someone, you know, we're family now because, you know, from over the years, man, it's been so out of it, man, watching... I think just understanding your story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you don't know All Blacks, you just kind of revere and like, you know, and you just kind of, man, you know, I wish I could do that. And then, like, you know, understanding your story, there's just layers to everything. And, you know, there's layers to everything, you know, and you've got to work for your stuff. Because I think what I see, especially as a young kid, only the guys that are like naturally talented are studying, they're like, they get through.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, your story, you had to mix that with hard work and, you know, and you had to really grind your stages through, especially, I mean, going down to Dunners, man. some hard work, especially in the bars down there.
Oh,
but, man, yeah, thanks for sharing your story, man. That was...
Pleasure.
There's going to be so many people that watch this and they're going to laugh, eh? Because they'll be like, what are these two being serious for?
We see these two clowning around every time.
Now look at them being serious for. Oh,
but look, it's honestly it's just amazing journeys that, you know, you don't actually, I suppose I did for a long time, you don't value when it's masked by disappointments. I say that, hey, and then other things get on top, but What does value is like, what I'm proud of is that I can, like, bring up my kids now. They really know, you know, as hard as it was for them to see me or not be there as an All Black, I think they always talk about that. You know, yeah. Tanika teases Trey and Tiara, hey, like, Dad was All Black when I was born. What about you two?
Yeah.
But then it's cool in the sense that they get to know me as their dad as well, but know that there's this backing behind them and what they see and value. And I think that's what I like about the kids of today too. Yeah, sure. And people mention that. I'm always proud of that, but it's like it's a new era. How do we get these kids to find their own way to be that? You know, because like it's always it is the underdog that gets through in this game. I feel like you know, there's guys like who do. You know, I was lucky that I wasn't lucky, but there's like I said, there were stepping stones and opportunities, and I was able to take them.
Yeah.
And I went through the system, hey. And these other guys, like, you know, who started late, but that's fine. You know, nothing's over.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly, and that's where, well, especially the young kids. These, you sometimes, you know, you hear it all the time. You can learn quickly of failure.
Yeah,
right?
So
fail quick, get back on your feet and go. And that's where we just want kids to, just because that's not happening now, doesn't mean it's over.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's massive for me. Like in the space that I'm at, it's like, how do I just get kids like keep it on, man?
Yeah.
This is only part of what your journey is. Mm. This is not the be all and end all.
And especially where your work is now and the mahi you're doing now, it's just a start. It really is just a start.
Yeah. I know, and that's the hardest thing to pitch to them. Yeah. You know. You know, and I get it. I get it when you're amongst it and it's full and you
feels like
you know, because the pressure's on and that's probably why I act like a clown at times for the kids, because I know how much is on their plate.
Yeah.
So I try to keep it lighthearted.
100%.
And just be like, I just don't tolerate rudeness or bad behaviour. Mm-hmm. But I said, joke around, let's alleviate all those pressures and stuff and just really, when it comes on, we're ready to go and roll it, you know. So
100%. Sweet Doko. So in closing, let's say there's a kid out there that you know, he believes he's got he knows he's got the ability, but he just doesn't believe himself. What would you kind of, if you could talk to that kid, what do you reckon you'd say to him?
I think there's no substitute to hard work, and nothing comes easy. And I've learned that, and I've seen it in so many people that I've been beside.
Mm.
You know, there's just no substitute for hard work. Secondly, it's just a support network. It's got to be real to you, but it's got to also be able to face you With harsh, you know, with harsh and fair criticism, but enough that they value where you're going.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that's a huge part. You know, your support system's got to add value to you as a person and not take away anything from you, you know. And then I suppose from both of those is the opportunities you get. You've got to just, if your heart's in there, sometimes it comes to a little bit of instinct. You don't need about 1,000 people to tell you where to go. Yep. There's something around it that you can see. If you can see there's a pathway of something else from it, take it.
Yep.
Like and sometimes it's probably going against the grain from everyone else, you know. If I think about people told me, why are you going to Southland, go to a farm club. Like, you know, if I'd listened to people going, don't go there, I probably wouldn't have made the Highlanders. You know, we're not going down there and gone through. Yeah. But, you know, my club, we went there and our club won. We did have a gun team, but our club won. But it's just around those, there's going to be opportunities, a pocket of opportunities that pop up for yourself. Take one. Oof. Don't just sit on the fence. Take one, roll it, and then after that, learn off those and go through. You just don't know where that take you. But if you've put on the, you've got the hard work, you've got the support network, then the opportunities come. You've got to take it. And go.
Oh, man, 100%. Man, that's awesome, man. I think that's also going to be a big factor and a big learning for a lot of the other players in here, because a lot of players that watch are kind of in the interim post-school. Mm. So they're in around the academy slash, like, you know, Bs and development and Prem's club players. Right. I think that'll also be huge for them as well, because that's a hard place to be in.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of these young players these
days.
It's
really
hard. Yeah.
It's really hard.
Because I think a lot of them, especially feedback-wise, and what I've talked to a lot of boys that are kind of in there, they just feel like the directions kind of, the compasses just keeps, like, you know, switching over, and they just want to feel, you know, on the straight and narrow. Obviously, no one's going to be on the straight and narrow in a career that's undeserved, but with those points you gave.
But I think also, like, I think in the responsibility, I said, that's why I think coaches have got a huge responsibility. It's transparency and management of our kids will determine whether they carry on in the game or not.
Yeah. 100%.
So, you know, the more that we're transparent and honest in the right way, in the right manner, the more the kid can make sure that he actually can make a decision that, Chucks, is it here or has he got that one there that he can roll through? And that's, you know, and too many, I suppose, in the past have just given what the kid wants to hear and it does nothing for them. They're stagnated and then they just, but. Hopefully those 3 points will help someone out there, Kaz, and then
100%. Nah, sweet family. That's the episode. Thanks to Peter Alatsini for coming in. Family, like I've always said. And shout out to the kids over in the Goldie and to Nika with baby. Granddad now.
Granddad. Papa Pete.
Papa Party Pete.
You've got to separate them dogs.
Nah, thanks, Togo. Thanks for coming on,
too
man.
Much,
I appreciate
man.
It.
Thank you so much. Awesome, my lord.